Hello, you are listening to episode 12 of Chips of Chorlton, and it's a bit of a different episode than what we're used to on the podcast. We were asked very nicely by Doc Martens and Miss Cloud to go to Camden to perform the podcast in front of a live audience. We also asked Anna Pryor from Metronomy to join us, and thankfully she said yes, so we all got on a train, went down to Camden and performed in front of a few people. What you're going to hear is the completely kind of unedited audio of the whole show, kind of warts and all. So it goes on for about an hour. Some really, really good stuff in there. Hope you enjoy it. Before I press play on the audio, please subscribe via your podcast provider. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Instagram. Yep, so without further ado, this is the live show from Camden, episode 12 of Chips of Chorlton.
Oi, oi.
Hello, Camden.
Will do.
All right.
Nice to see you. Are we recording, by the way, Neil?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yep.
We did a podcast at a festival, and we were on stage. Fucking huge tent, wasn't it? We were on stage. It's like, Neil, have you pressed record yet? No. So we're run all the way across. It was a horrible, horrible moment.
Yeah, this was in a 2,000 capacity room at a Blue Dot Festival, and there were 25 people there. So it was a long sprint for Neil.
And the, I don't know if you heard the podcast, but the first start of it, I'm just like, hi, yes, welcome to Chips of Chorlton. Yeah, so it was terrible, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, you've already sworn in the first 30 seconds. So
are we allowed to swear?
Why don't you just get on with it?
Of course we are.
Okay,
yeah.
Fuck the Tories.
Shit.
Yeah. There we go. Wow, how about that for introduction?
Yeah, I've had a couple of podcasts.
Yes, Neil, kick us off.
Okay, Duncan, I will kick us off. Yes, so what? Yeah. Okay, so hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Chips of Chorlton. We are live from Dr. Martin's in Camden. Woo! Thank you very much. Has everyone seen the podcast before?
Seen.
This is the joy of editing out your podcast when you've had a few drinks.
Not editing that.
We never edit it out, by the way. Has everyone listened to the podcast before?
Yeah,
you're all there. You're all with it. Okay, so which is great. Yeah, so what we usually do, as you probably be aware of, we will chat music, chat chips, and usually we have a special guest as well. But first I'm going to introduce Dutch Uncles. We have Duncan.
All right. Hi.
Hi. Andy.
Hello.
Robin.
You're right.
Can I have a round of applause for these guys as well, please? Is that all right?
Thanks. Totally undeserved.
And our very special guest this week is, of course, Anna Pryor. Woo! Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There we go.
Hello.
Thank you. Hi, thank you. So how is everyone? We used to start off with a little bit of a... A little
How
bit of a chit
chat.
What's going on? Yeah. What's going on?
How was your journey down, Neil? Was it okay?
It was lovely, thank you, Andy.
The company was good. The
company was great. It was really, really good. We obviously, with all the news unfolding about Brexit, we won't talk about Brexit every podcast that we do.
We're trying to get to the bottom of political songwriting somewhere in all this.
We're also trying
to find the funny bit of it. There's just no humour.
There's no humour in
Brexit.
How
are you doing, Anna?
How are you doing, Anna? You okay?
Feeling great.
Yeah.
have you done many podcasts or any sort of chit-chatting sort of forums like this before?
I haven't actually. It's my first time. My maiden voyage.
Okay. Well, of course, we've brought some chips to review.
I can
and
smell
to
them. They smell amazing.
They do smell amazing.
Smell
I think we've got enough for everyone in the audience as well. So we'd like to kind of gauge your opinion
on the chips
as to whether you think the chips are a goer or not. Yeah,
we'll come with that. It might be quite an embarrassing moment on the audio that it just goes silent and everyone just starts eating chips. We'll come to that. We'll come to that in a minute. So what's happening? What's happening in the music world? I think we wanted to chat very briefly, hopefully, about this threatening thing that's going on.
The threatened phenomenon.
Threatening phenomenon. Yes. Are you all aware of what's going on with this? These guys, these threatened guys?
Yeah. So there's a singer-songwriter. As always, now that we're on stage, I've forgotten all the details. But there's a singer-songwriter from LA who has been writing. He's been very much like a Prince, you know, sort of figure. He's been, recording every instrument. He's his own band.
But it's like a heavy metal project, isn't it?
Heavy metal project.
He's shred as well.
Well, threatening, isn't it? I'm assuming that was a fretting thing. Anyway, yeah, so he's managed to dupe a load of venues in Europe to kind of book him for this tour. And basically, he's done... How many dates was it? It was about... On the poster, I only saw 12 dates, but then I've heard stories that like it's been like 40-date long tour.
I mean, you might have been doing it in the States as well, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, he's been playing to two people in every venue he's played. Pretty much his tour manager and whoever was putting them on. and has been duped in this. And we thought it'd just be an interesting thing to talk about how the internet can manipulate sort of size of a band, but then also the very process as to how this thing could even happen and why does it happen? Because, I mean, it feels like a very post-Anvil sort of thing to occur, as if to say that the story of somebody coming all the way over from LA to play to no one should make us all go and watch it. But actually, he's tricked himself in the process. I'm just having the whole conversation.
Just whether he was so naive that, you know, he'd obviously paid for all this Facebook sponsorship, he'd got loads of Twitter bots to kind of make up numbers, and then at the end of it, he didn't actually have any fans. So, like you say, he duped himself, but whether he actually thought, if he had these numbers, maybe people would think that he was big when he came over to Europe and then they would come to the gig.
I mean, our initial reaction to the story was, he's playing to two people. We're like, so? We've all done that.
That's the thing that I mean, it worse my mind about it.
We're talking to two people tonight. We wanted to make jokes about this from the off.
It's sort of like a band playing to nobody is a very regular occurrence. It really is, isn't it? I don't know why it makes headline news. It's really unfair. All the gigs that I played when no one came, no one ever gave a shit about that.
Yeah, I wish someone made a news article about every single gig I played to two people.
Yeah.
Which begs the first question to our special guest. Anna, have you ever played to no one before?
No, not to nobody. I played a show last year just to my mum and dad and the sound engineer. And she had a cup of tea, and she pulled the sofa out from the side of the room.
Yeah, you see, that's kind of like in family trolling, that isn't it? I mean, I have that every time I go back to see like my family. It's always like, yeah, can you guys actually write a hit song yet? It's like, I don't know, can you? It's like don't be so bloody sassy about it.
Take that, mum.
It's tricky. But yeah, so like dragging a sofa and just to kind of make up the numbers. Yeah. I don't know. It feels like spreading it about a bit. I don't know. Yeah, Neil, you've obviously played to no one.
Oh, well, thank you.
You've got the face of a man who's played to absolutely no one.
This is really good, this. Yeah. This is the shit that I edit out. You know what I mean? I've played loads.
Swears.
I played loads of gigs to no one, demoralising as it was. That's why I gave up and became your session guitarist, you know, so I could actually play in front of some people, which was again, there are some gigs that we've played, even recently, where there's been no one there. I was thinking back to the show we did in Exeter at the end of the Big Balloon year, wasn't it?
It was a festival in Exeter. Yeah. I've forgotten the name. We were headlining a stage. Public Service Broadcasting, our podcast chums, they were headlining the main stage, and it was just bad programming, really. They were on at the same time that we were, and it was one of those days where we had to get there for an 11 a.m. sound check to only be on stage at 9 p.m. Luckily, it was non-league day, so we found a non-league football team to go and watch. They were the Heavy Tree United, weren't they? Mm. And we showed up in our gold tour van. We had a gold tour van for this trip.
Solid gold.
We showed up, and they went, and as soon as we walked into the clubhouse, the guys just came up to us and went, "You are immediately the most famous people that have ever come here."
Fuck me.
And we set up our little ultras thing behind the nets, didn't we? We were the heavy bottom boys.
the bottom heavy boys.
The bottom heavy
boys.
Was it bottom heavy or heavy bottom?
I don't know. Both work. Blot that gig out of my mind a
little bit.
And then there was a gig.
There was a gig to three people.
Yeah, I know you want to focus on the three people, but I'd rather focus on the heavy bottom boys.
So what about when you're starting off? Because that's what Threaten are trying to do. They're trying to build a reputation for themselves. Where was the worst show that you've all had? Going somewhere, big trek.
Well, we were talking at the one probably... You know, the biggest hyped London one we had when our management at the time, we were very young, and they'd set us up this show where, you know, all these industry types, rabbit ears there, industry types were going to come down and listen to our music. And it just so happened that when we went on stage, all of the toilets flooded, which was sort of halfway between the audience and the stage. So there was the stage, the audience, and then a river of shit, like just in front of the stage.
Literally
there.
A river of shit.
And like the audience was so poor, and there was one guy with his mop trying to clean up all this stuff as well. And it was one of the most demoralising moments. And at this time as well, our guitarist didn't have an amp because it hadn't been bothered to pick up by our management. And so they were driving over with that as well. And they sort of turned up halfway through the gig, wading through... You know, various turds. Like, here we go, guys, I've got the amps. It doesn't matter. Fuck it.
Just to see Pete playing an electric guitar with no pedals going for a PA system. You may not know how to imagine how that sounds. Imagine a river of shit coming out of the guitar being represented by a river of shit in front of the stage. Yeah, but London shows kind of... London shows are always the ones where you're going to have all the industry types going around. Anna, how many times...
how many times have you seen a river of shit?
How many times have you played...
At a London gig.
...with the river of shit separating you from the industry and your possible monetary future? Have you ever had any experiences of sort of like industry showcasing in London before joining Metronomy and Lightspeed Champion and things of that nature? Because of course you're not based, like, you're from Doncaster. We were talking about this before.
Donny.
Yeah, yeah.
Any Donny in the house?
Anyone from Doncaster?
We should probably start from the beginning. So, where are you from?
I'm from Doncaster.
And
how did you end up in London, basically? That's kind of, yeah.
Music. I'm a slave to the big M. I was in this girl band when I lived in Leeds. I lived in Leeds for a little bit, and we used to, our manager at the time, he'd drive us up to London. Sorry, down to London. Oh, I've lived in London for so long
now.
Everything's just going up. We drove us down to London and we played a Vice party. Do you remember when they used to do those?
Oh, yeah.
This must have been 2006 or something. So there were bands like the Towers of London, the Cribs, actually. They were pretty good.
Yeah.
There was a rapper, I can't remember his name. It's Plan B, he was doing it as well. Anyway, it was like, it's a proper shit show. There was no one there to watch us, but our manager always used to say, "It's a paid rehearsal, girls. It's a paid rehearsal." I'm like, "All right, yeah."
Ooh, what a word that!
That just stuck in my brain. That was a paid rehearsal.
Blimey, yeah. I suppose the travel. I mean, that's always the most painful aspect of it, isn't it? To travel all the way to London just to have a meaningless gig, and then to have to stew on that for the next 4.5 hours.
It's the most soul-destroying thing in the world, yeah. I think, taking a four-hour drive, coming down, playing to no one, and a river of shit, of course.
Yeah.
Well, I remember, like, a couple of years ago, we counted all the gigs we'd done in London.
Yeah.
And there were so many shit ones that we could think of. and in the van on the way back, like, how many times had we had that van journey back?
Oh, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
And then you get to Toddington Services and they've run out of bacon and egg sandwiches as well.
That's the ultimate killer.
The ultimate killer.
Yeah. We forget to pick up beer when we're leaving London. Then there's no... Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's quite sad, all this. Should we start sharing some chips around?
I just want to pick up on that. So why do we feel it necessary of being up north to come down to London? Why do we have to do it?
Because Arctic Monkeys didn't do it until the very last minute, I suppose. They played at the Astoria, didn't they? When obviously all... I think Dance Floor had already come out as a song and they were like the northern band that would not play London until that point. But then again, they championed the internet in a way that Threaten definitely didn't.
Yes.
I'm just trying to bring it all full circle. I want to get you guys some chips. I don't know why we feel the need to... Well, in our personal experience, it's because our management was based in London. And I think there is just generally that... apart from the In the City Festival in Manchester, I think there's very few outlets in the north to have, you know, focus on the north. It's a bit pants, really. Especially now that In the City's gone. And
yeah, well, it's been gone for 8 years.
It. What?
It's been gone for 8 years as well.
Yeah, but it's fine now. It's a lot more...
It's true, yeah. It's not as necessary to rely so much on London, but it's, you know...
Yeah. We always came to do shows in London to try and further our career, more bunny ears. But I suppose the point with the Threaten thing, trying to bring it back again, was that there was no point to it other than, in the beginning, him having a massive ego about it and just generally wanting to tour, to have venues to play, no matter if there's... one person there or 100 people there, it doesn't really matter. As long as he can say and post on social media that he's going on tour, it doesn't really matter.
But then mentally that's quite crushing to play to no one.
Maybe it's
day
not.
In, day out. I think it really is.
I'm not sure. I think if you're like a massive sociopath, I think you...
He's a narcissist, all right.
Okay,
basically.
Okay, yeah. Okay,
he's
okay.
A narcissist and he has very, very, very carefully calculated this. And I see it more as a comment on how far one can get as an artist if you buy followers. Because this is the age of social media, right? So I've tried to get DJ gigs in the past and they only care how many followers you have. Unless you've got like a little K next to the number, they don't really give a shit. And it's that's kind of the reality, and it just shows how much, how far you can get. Yeah. If you just like, you're just really good at bullshitting, and you can buy followers. I know people that have done it.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, and you can too. Buy like,
so do we,
likes, and you know, I think he's like, I think it's a PR stunt. And then he did, he broke his silence, bunny ears, broke his silence, and wrote on Twitter something like something about fake news. If you're reading this, you're part of the illusion. I was like, that was so sinister, don't you think?
Yeah, but we were talking before about how the people that do this best are the people, because obviously now there's a big buzz around it, and if they did tour again, they would genuinely get people going down because it's a bit of a laugh, exactly. Sort of the irony, which is the more self-aware people who do this really play on that as well. Like Anvil in a way, although I feel like he is sort of genuinely, does believe the music he makes is great. Mm. But if you're aware of the fact that you are a joke and you can play on it and you can continue to be that character, a bit like the director of The Room, you know, like, yeah, he knows that. He knows he's that sort of joke and plays on it because it's sort of turned into a little bit of a career for him.
Yeah, did you see the poster that he did for the UK tour?
No.
It's basically him in front of, like, a seemingly sort of waving in the wind Union Jack with his, I think it's an Ibanez or one of those, like, metal guitars, you know?
Oh, we know.
And he's just his hair just like, ooh. I was like, what? I don't know. I'm kind of into it. I probably wouldn't go to a gig unless I could get on the guest list.
I'm just gutted we didn't go. You know, what an opportunity that would have been, particularly for promotion of our podcast.
They talk about that free trade hall.
Exactly, it's like Bob Dylan at the free trade hall. That would have been in Manchester, wasn't it?
But yeah, and he played at Rebellion, didn't he, in Manchester? Which is, for anyone who's not been, I mean, I've not been, but I've seen pictures. It's kind of like one of those sort of... you know, like a strip club where they've got like a cage in front of the stage so people can throw bottles of beer at them, at the dancers. just me. Anyway, yeah, it's a bit like that, but next to Deansgate Station. So it doesn't really, it feels like a very weird slice of something weird. Anyway, I just want to give a,
I think you guys are going to need like a couple of minutes to literally digest them and digest your thoughts on them as well.
Yeah.
Whoa, fucking mayonnaise? Whoa. No way.
Look at that. Yes, I agree with you on that. It's ketchup.
This is a purely chip-based podcast.
This is
no
the worst sandwich I've ever been part of. This is the driest sandwich I've ever been part of. This is crazy.
Right, so do you want to go and hand them out? Or is Neil's going, or is he going for a wee?
Yeah, but, have you just had enough? Yeah, okay, we should put them on this chair. Although, okay. I think
maybe if you just pass them across the rows, Neil, and people can pass them down to each other. And we'll have some
as
well.
Or do it like communion style. Just come up and get your chair.
Oh, yeah, no, we've got four portions. So, Rob, if you want to start at that end.
That's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah, you're up now, guys.
We should take this opportunity to say that despite, you know, this is kind of just, as I say, it's chit-chatting. We can plan these things, but it always kind of wanders off into the improvisational. If anyone has any questions about anything we're saying at any point, feel free to put your hand up and then we can sort of include you in the conversation. Yes, you sir.
Ooh. Okay, so we have to probably repeat the question.
Of course.
I suppose social media and etc. had an impact on Cortina's being as big as they are in Manchester.
Well,
it was.
Yeah, no. I remember seeing that Cortina's gig where they were playing the arena, but their warm up show was York Fibbers, and the difference there is like 17,700 and something like that. Without sounding like I've got some Rain Man knowledge there of venue capacities,
but the difference was so pronounced in the early days. You can't really tell now because obviously it's, you know, massive venues in Manchester and they're, you know, relatively big venues in London. But yeah, back in the day when they played, I think maybe the Scala in London. And then the G-Mex in Manchester, and it was absolutely insane. But I don't know, really. I mean, they're represented by a manager who is specialised in breaking that sort of lad rock music, you know. So maybe it's just that, I don't know. But it pains me to think that Manchester is just so, you know...
Yeah,
and you know, like it can be so affected by that kind of music still, and it's just still reeling from sort of Oasis and Stone Roses culture.
Yeah, and I think there is a bit to do with that. I mean, you get wrapped up in it a bit in Manchester. For me, anyway, I've seen a lot of unsigned bands, particularly the bands in Manchester that have sort of come up over the past 15 years. Cortinas are by far and away the best unsigned band I've ever seen in Manchester. It was a gig.
Was that down to the crowd as well, though?
I think so. Yeah, exactly. Like that's the point. You kind of got wrapped up in it. It was at In the City Festival, as we mentioned before. It was at a place called Joshua Brooks, and it was just amazing. I'm not a particularly huge fan, if I am a fan of the Cortinas music, but being at that show in a room pretty much like this, it was just like jaw-droppingly good. I've not really bothered about their music, their gigs since.
I feel like you might have been affected by the sort of gig syndrome crowd.
I could have been, yeah. Nice. I'm not... sorry, Anna's just putting some ketchup on there. Got a laugh, I think. So. It's fine.
We're laughing at ketchup.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what happens.
What's going on, right?
But yeah, so that is... I mean, I completely get your point about the Cortinas, but I do understand why people like them. I think that's the way where my head's at with them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but I don't think the work's been consistent enough to kind of keep on. Genuinely, the beginning was special, and it was paired with, from my understanding, from our experience of supporting them before we were Dutch Uncles, of like pretty much playing to a Poznan of the Middleton militia that would be at every gig. And it was a special moment of like those were songs that talked about the geography of Manchester. We were going to talk about this, about the Good, the Bad and the Queen album that comes out tomorrow.
Yeah, we do.
It's essentially the Brexit album. It's an interesting kind of thing, especially today of all days. But on the Cortinas front, I think he basically capitalised on that moment by also having the persona of being the third Gallagher brother, essentially. And then that's just... the only thing that really saddens me about this is that every kind of 18 months, a special announcement gets made, and it's the same thing, and you're watching your hometown just kind of go through the same cycle again and again and again. And it's just a shame that people don't, like, you know, the man plays football with Bruce Willis on the beach in the Bahamas, from what he says, in the early hours of the evening. The morning, sorry. He's well going to come after me after that if he ever finds out about this.
Yeah, he's listening to this.
Yeah, if he can shout down Rich Cheatham on stage at Academy 2. Rich Cheatham, who is somebody that you don't need to know about, but that was very weird, wasn't it? So he's coming after me now. Anyway, yeah, I just think it needs to just have a break for a bit. You know, just take some stock, and then if you write something as special as the first album again, then great. But I've just not seen evidence of it otherwise. Cortinas, Anna.
I literally have no opinion on the Cortinas.
That's the right thing. Good way to exist.
Because I think they're shit, I literally haven't listened to any of their music. Is that bad?
It's probably not. It's probably because you... If you weren't in Manchester at the time, then I think that has a lot to do with it.
Point,
You wouldn't have actually had them rammed down your throat like we had back in the day, about 10 years ago.
Yeah. So. Well, should we take a light break from the Cortinas and talk about chips?
Yeah, let's talk about these chips.
Has anyone had a chip?
Everyone had a chip? Has everyone got a chip in the mouth?
Has everyone got the flavour in their mouth?
We've hogged a load of chips up here.
Yeah, if anyone's hungry.
I'd like to start by saying that chips shouldn't be served in a closed box.
A closed
box, that, because they're really soggy now. No,
there's too much moisture there, isn't there?
Yeah.
I can see the moisture, which isn't great.
Well, that's the first talking point is: are chippy chips allowed to be soggy?
No, they are in certain areas. Because then, I always search out the crispier chip. Save them to the end. Who bought these chips? They didn't have scraps, did they? Who went and got them? They didn't have scraps. No. Damn it. It's your fault.
they have been sweating on stage.
Under the lights.
Indeed.
Oh, we should mention where they're from as well. They're from Poppies.
Yes, they are from Poppies, I suppose.
Which came highly recommended as well.
And we will give, of course, you guys the opportunity to say whether you like them or not, and it will affect the score.
It won the National Fish and Chip
Awards. One day we will write a table of all the places we have for few chips. I mean, chip journalism is madness itself. But
so is everyone sort of local to here, or is everyone from all over the place?
Is this your stand-up? So, where's everyone from? You having a good time?
I'll repeat the question. So, because we are all northern up here, and we have a certain degree of chip pride. basically, northern chips are better than southern chips. So am I insulting anyone by saying that here? Or is it anyone? Everyone's.
I mean, we are in London.
At the back. What's all that? There's faces up at the back. Everyone all right? Yeah. Chips from Scotland. That's way north. I like that. Yeah, you're right. You are right. These are actually the best chips I've had in London. I'd probably go so far to say I've had some shocking ones in London. Our friend Maxi had probably the worst chips you ever had in your life just a moment ago with the fries, weren't they?
Yeah, bad fries.
Two-word review, maybe. Words, that's he's a man of few words.
So what do you think? From being up north, as we all are, the chips down here are just crap, aren't they?
Wow.
Whoa.
Do you ever find yourself going for a chippy tea?
There's am I allowed to say the names of places? There's a place, I think it's just in northeast London. It's called Sutton and Sons. And they do it's really good, isn't it?
That's a yes.
What? Wow. So we've just been informed that they have a vegan fish and chip shop. Bunny ears and chip shop.
Yeah, it's like a sort of...
Does it taste like fish, fritter. Though?
That's it's very modern down south, isn't it? Isn't it? Oh, it's very, very new wave.
I'm just slightly concerned with vegan fish, where they would get the fish flavour from.
Umami, I think, isn't it? Yeah. Like some kind of Japanese thing? Umami, okay. Is that like a... Or I don't know. Yeah. Bailing on that.
Someone just fell over at the back there. Right?
I've got a crispy one, so...
Happy the now. Crispy one.
Yeah.
I always like to try and find something other than the chips to review. In this case, the faux newspaper thing is a little unnerving.
what does it say on it?
And of course, you guys may hate mayonnaise straight up. It's absolutely shocking me to my very core.
No, it's not that. But it's just that we wanted to review the chips as they come, you know?
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The chips papers are unnerving. Move on, Andy. Carry on.
Yeah, you know, I think we are really running out of words to say about chips.
We are. We are 12 episodes in now. Episode 12.
I mean, it's a chippy chip, and I'm sort of hesitant to say that I don't like chippy chips. I'm more of a fry sort of person.
Far more chips this year than I ever have before.
Yeah. I think when we started the chip element of the podcast at the very beginning, I think we were almost determined to figure out that the ultimate chip is the one that you make yourself. Like, you know, by which I thought we all meant just oven chips. So I was like, yeah, I'll agree. Oven chips are probably the best. And then we probably realised it was probably spoons chips. So these are good.
These are all right. Yeah, they're all right. Should we score them?
Let's score them because we're really struggling to articulate any words about these chips.
Does anyone else have any more thoughts on the chips, Anna?
I think they're all right. They could be more salty, but that's just... Yeah. You can always add more salt. You can't take it away, though.
But I was going to say, tread lightly. I would take this as another southern fancy, you know? Like, kind of sort of leaving you up to the salt rationing, you know, whereas up north it does tend to be a lot heavier.
It's just kind of dawning on me. I'm probably just pissed off every single southern listener to our podcast about chips. But you're slagging off every southern chip.
Those 10 people are going to be fucked.
I thought it was only middle-aged men from America ever since we interviewed Mike Joyce.
Yeah, it's just people in America listening. Yeah. It's really weird.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
So maybe we could get
everyone listening, welcome.
So maybe we can get a consensus from the audience on a general scoring out of 10.
So
I don't know how this is going to work.
Just shout out your score out of 10. Pitchfork style decimals. 4 at the back.
7, 6.
I heard an 8.5.
6.5.
6.7, 4 and 7. I'm going to have to probably...
Would everyone be happy with 6.2?
6.2. Nods, 6.2.
That's interesting. That's 6.2. Neil?
6.
6 for you. You're going to have to just exaggerate your answer while I get my calculator out. 6.2 plus 6. Anna, what do you think?
Well, I have pretty low standards when it comes to most food things. I will literally eat anything. And, you know, like when you get a bad packet of crisps and you're like, they taste a bit weird, but you end up eating them all anyway.
Absolutely.
I'm like that with chips. And these, they're all right.
Yeah.
They're not my favourite chip, but I'll eat them all.
Yeah. Got a lot to go out.
So maybe like just a
5.5. That's low standards, but that's pretty harsh. Dunk?
Oh, you know.
Nope.
6.6.
6.6.
Yeah, that's me, where my head's at.
6.2. Always agree with the crowd. Robin?
6.3.
Naturally on the fence. And that is divided by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6.1, ladies and gentlemen. There we go.
Congratulations.
Happy days.
You poppies.
Sorry, poppies. Felt like we were under pressure there. I didn't have time to sort of swirl them around my mouth like a fine wine. But
yeah. So, yeah, so, Anna, what are you up to at the moment then? You told us backstage, if such a thing on a podcast, that you're off to rehearsal later on. What exactly are you doing?
I've agreed to be part of the rework of a folk band called Trees, an English folk band. It's quite fun. From the 70s, yeah. I'm just doing one song, just because I'm a bit lazy.
And what else is going on? You're doing a lot of DJing and...
Yeah, I do a lot of DJing now. I've been DJing since I was about 18, but I started to get quite obsessed with a load of sort of female techno DJs, and in my brain, I'm a techno DJ, but I hate techno. I mean, yes. I don't
Why?
Hate it.
Why?
I
just, Why do you hate techno? What's...
I don't like high BPM technos. So once we're kind of getting into the sort of like high... You know, like 128s, 130s. I'm like, oh, God.
In regards to the DJing endeavour, do you have like a shit hot name that goes with it? Or is it like kind of DJ Anna Pryor?
Yeah. Isn't it?
No, I mean, DJ that's shit hot's available.
that's good. No. Because I DJ and around Manchester, just doing bar sets mainly. And a lot of the time when venues want to do something and put my name on a poster, they always use my full name. I say, don't do that. Like, use something silly like Dunkachino or something like that. And it always says DJ Duncan Wallace on there. And as soon as I see that, I just hear this, like, screaming Braveheart sound of, like, Duncan Wallace! It's like, it's so overly Scottish. Like, I'm not even going to play the Proclaimers tonight. Like, well, maybe. If it's a six-hour set, I'll probably get it in there. But, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think finding DJ names is really hard if you establish yourself as a musician first and then you go into DJing.
The thing is with DJ names, somebody else has to give you that DJ name. You cannot choose your own, apparently. That's what I've been told.
Yeah.
So sometimes I like to be DJ Pryor-Z.
Yeah,
that kind of works.
Surprisingly, but with a Z or with an S, like, I don't know.
Does it depend on where you're DJing?
Maybe, what kind of set I'm
doing.
If I'm just to play some funky house and have a live saxophone player, it's Pryor-Z.
I was going to say, in extension of the question, like, how do you find, when Metronomy is in downtime, so when Joe's away writing and demoing and stuff, I was going to say, like, how does it feel kind of waiting sort of for the next... product to come around with Metronomy, because I often sympathise with Andy and Pete, sometimes Neil, when me and Robin are writing like the next Dutch Uncles album, and it's kind of, you know, they're waiting for us to kind of come up with the goods so we can start to attack these things as a band. And I can always imagine that the time is pretty frustrating, and you just have to, I'm not going to imagine too much. How do you find it?
I learned the hard way, I think, in 2013. It was the first time that we'd had like a proper, right, no gigs this year, that's it, I'm going to go away and do this, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't really have anything prepared in my brain of what I wanted to do, because I'd kind of committed my life for such a long time to being the drummer in Metronomy or the drummer in Lightspeed Champion, or, like, you know, following everyone else's career. And I was like, oh, fuck. Like, what do I do? Like, I had no clue. And I kind of lost my mind a little bit, had a bit of a breakdown, and then epiphany happened. And then I got back into my art, and I kind of do a lot of portrait drawing and stuff like that. I'm kind of...
What's your preferred media?
Just a pen. Pen on paper.
There's worlds of difference between pen and pencil, so...
So I started doing that as more of a therapy thing. And then we went back on tour, and then... when I knew that we were going to have a little hiatus again with Joe going and writing, and he was working with Robin as well and doing her album, I fucked off to Costa Rica for a month and learned how to be a yoga teacher.
Yes. Great.
What a wanker. Anyway, that's what I did.
So how's the yoga going then? Like?
Well, I taught for a little bit, but I just didn't like it. I'm not naturally... the person, I know I'm in a band and I'm on stage and I'm here doing this now, but I'm not a natural kind of orator, let's say, so I wouldn't sort of stand on stage and, or just like, maybe I'm just not a natural leader, and I just felt really uncomfortable teaching, and I felt uncomfortable charging people money for yoga, because for me in my brain, like, I've done yoga for a long time, it's like, I just want to give it to you. Everyone's like, oh, that's ridiculous. Well, you mean, can't just, yeah, like, give it, you know, give it away, give your time away, and like, I mean, I'm kind of in a privileged situation that I can, like, I can probably do that for free, but I just also like being led in that way, so I just would prefer to go to a class and have someone tell me what to do.
No, yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, well, yeah, it's what, well, makes sense for your passions to want to do it not for profit, really,
yeah,
doesn't it?
And I think everything in life you need to have a yin and a yang, and I think being a drummer in a band, going on tour, drinking, you know, like, we like to drink, and I eat too many crisps and chips when I'm away, and then when I come back, it's nice to just have that thing that you know you can do that just chills you out. It's quite nice. That's just your thing that you kind of do just for you. And then, yeah, go away and be a rock star again at the weekend or whatever.
Do rock any of star. Us have that kind of thing we do just for ourselves?
Well, Andy did yoga the other night, didn't
I? I did last night, actually, yeah. Yeah, still feeling a bit stiff and, hugely relaxed as well. But yeah, my girlfriend teaches a yoga class, actually.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
Spent time. And I went for the first time after 2 years of her badgering me to go. I went, and it wasn't awkward in the slightest.
Does anyone have any questions about yoga? No?
No, it's not a yoga.
Does anyone like to learn a yoga move? No? Yeah? Someone give us a move.
Nope.
No? I mean, I know, like, the floor is...
That would be podcast gold, wouldn't it? You know?
I feel like, Anna, if we did a downward dog right now, we'd just get a face full of chips. If you know what I mean. I think you do. It's just literal.
Yeah, a bit like Cockney slang, that. Yeah.
I think for the rest of us, like, downtime is just, unfortunately, just watching football and drinking more beer.
I thought you were going to say something much darker then. Very good.
All right.
Just watching football. Yeah, non-league football. Yeah.
I suppose doing this, wasn't it? I suppose we were...
Well, yeah, well, you got us wrapped into this, didn't you?
I got you wrapped into this because I get extremely bored. I've got nothing to do, basically, in my life apart from play guitar for you guys. But I suppose we interviewed before, weren't we, about, you know, the whole point of doing this podcast was to sort of have something maybe to chat about in the downtown of Dutch Uncles almost whilst you sort of go away and do the new record, you know, if there is going to be one. Think about doing the new record. Yeah. I suppose you were saying before about communication as well, band. So do you know what's happening in Metronomy? Do you know where the songs are up to? Do you get the demos through? How does it work? sorry.
the album is done, I think.
Okay. You allowed to say?
Nobody knows when it's coming out.
Okay.
I'm putting it down to our record label has Christine and the Queens, and I think they were spending a lot of time on that. And Joe was also doing the Robin album as well, so he was sort of spending a lot of his time on that. But he's been sending us demos since, like, the start of mid-2017, and we've been playing a few new songs from the record live this summer just gone.
Well, the last campaign, I think I saw, obviously we played with you at Brixton. Mm-hmm. It's an absolutely amazing show. I saw you at Festival 6 as well. The show at Festival 6 where you were headlining. That was amazing. An absolutely fantastic show.
Thank you.
Yeah. Isn't it that September? So that was. Were they the biggest shows that Metronomy had done over that campaign or ever in their, you know, in their history?
We did Ali Pali. That was in 2014. That was pretty epic. I always know when the gig was epic because I don't remember it.
Okay.
If that makes sense, because I have this I get real kind of, I don't know if it's a problem, but I feel like it's a problem with adrenaline. I have quite a lot of like, how do I deal with it before I go on stage? I'm just quite not nervous. It's like an energy that I can't quite quantify.
I don't know. You guys, I completely agree. I made an effort, particularly when we supported you in Brixton, to remember the gig. I hardly remember any shows, and I was like looking around. I want to see it. You know,
I just remember that guy reading a book in front of us.
That was, that's exactly what I remember.
I've got a similar experience as well. We played a festival last summer. I think it was in Switzerland. And we were on two bands before the Prodigy on the main stage. And like, Prodigy is one of those bands that I think have like proper hardcore fans that only ever listen to Prodigy. And they were right at the front. There was four of them right at the barrier, right in the middle, just like this. I mean, you can't see, it's a podcast, but I'm like, arms on the barrier, just like really sullen looking faces, just like, get the fuck off the stage, you morons. I hate everything about you. I don't even know you, but I hate you. It's that kind of...
Your very presence offends
me. Just devil eyes the whole time. But there was like one of the guys towards the end, he was kind of like moving his head a little. And you just know, these guys are going to go home.
It was just like when we play with you and this guy was reading his book and he looked up slightly.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, I like this one. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh yeah, I saw it as well.
We should have called him out
right in front of me.
I think he had a backpack on as well, probably full of books.
I remember that gig, this gig, the Brixton Academy gig specifically. I had my own trauma going on because I remember there was the band who'd played before us, who were from the Netherlands, had a massive set list with all the things they were going to say in English written in between the songs. So it was massive, like A3 sheet of paper. And of course, rock and roll, you never take your set lists off. You leave them on the stage. And there was one right in my dancing area. And I remember after our first song, I was like, this is dangerous, I might slip. So I went down to pick it up. Sold out venue, 5,000 people. And I couldn't get a piece of paper up off the stage. It was perfectly flush with the stage. I was like, hold up.
Is this pure level?
No. Hold up.
Just this dude at the front of the book going.
Like... And it was all of a sudden, because like, you know, you get used to playing Enormodomes, don't you? Enormodomes.
Yes, you do.
Steady.
You do,
apparently.
You do, don't you?
Apparently you do.
You do. What?
Apparently you do. No, but you do switch something off in your head that makes you think you're not going in front of 5,000 people. Yeah, you're just going to go on stage. It's going to be fine. It's worse when there's no one there or whatever else. But then, like, that moment comes along and it just switches the thing back. I was like, oh, shit. Like, you just drop everything and realise that you are actually you in front of all these people and you might as well have your cock out. It's fine.
And we'll never play Brixton Academy again.
Well, thanks for the invite, mate. And we got the most terrible FOMO. You were like, are you guys staying for drinks? Like, no, we're driving home. We're from the north. Oh, why do we do it to ourselves? Anyway, we should move on. It's the end of the year.
Nearly the end of the year.
It's the end of the year in terms of, like, release material. Sarah, stop laughing. It's nearly the end of the year in terms of released material and stuff. Anna, any particular highlights? Favourite records of this year? Favourite artists?
Oh, God, I really hate this question. I don't know why.
Well, I know that you do radio shows, so you have to know about these things. Because if not, it's just like Les McQueen talking about the summer of 72 and what's... creme brulee we're up to.
Such a niche League of Gentlemen reference.
But an excellent one. Any artists that you've kind of like been really impressed by in researching and things like that? Because I do a radio show in Manchester and it's the only way that I really focus on new music and things that are coming out, because otherwise I just listen to the Blue Nile every day until my death. But
I've just been, like, for the first time in my life, more interested in electronic music. Actually, that's not true, because I was a massive Nine Inch Nails fan when I was a kid. But
that's kind of electronic as
well. I've started like going to clubs because there's a DJ playing that I want to play, and I'm like, that's weird. You know, it's more kind of like labels that are releasing stuff that I really like electronic wise. And like, I think there's like people like Moscow Man and Peggy Goo and Nina Kravitz.
Oh, yeah, Peggy Goo's great.
Yeah, she's cool. So more stuff like, you know, this DJ called Hi, who used to be the resident at Phonox. She was like the first female to have a residency there. I've just been mainly focusing on electronic stuff that I can DJ, you know.
Peggy Goo is an answer. I've forgotten about indie music.
But there was an album that came out last year. Can I say one from last year?
Of course, yeah. You can say one from last year.
This guy called Sir Woz. Have you heard of him?
No.
You'd love him. He's brilliant. You should check him out.
It's a lowercase s as well, isn't it? Yeah. I remember seeing it written down.
And I've not been able to get over that album, actually. I quite listen to it quite a lot. Anyway.
That's right. So what are you guys? What's your highlights this year, then?
In terms of discovering artists, my highlights would be a Bolton MC who goes by the name of Crystal. Crystal. Don't know why I'd spell the whole thing. Crystal. She's only released two singles this year. The first single is called So Real. Is it So Real? No, Too Real. Sorry. Too Real. And she's just released another single called Vibe. Saw her play at Sounds Near the City. And I discovered it through, obviously, just trying to find new stuff to play on the radio. But yeah, incredible. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what she does next year. I'm also really looking forward to seeing what Rebecca Taylor from Slow Club, her solo project, Self Esteem. I'm really excited to see what that does next year as well. So yeah, cool. Okay. I think the future's looking very bright.
Good. Andy?
Well, not new artists, but I'm very much enjoying the new John Grant album.
You went to see him, didn't you?
Did go and see him the other day, yeah. Unfortunately, me and my friend I'd like to know the general opinion on this. Me and my friend were talking at a gig. We were having a small conversation with each other.
At the back, by the merch desk.
Thanks, Dunk. You're on my side. We were next to a man, and when we stood next to him, I could almost sense like he wanted us to sort of get louder in our chat so that he could like shame me immediately. And that's exactly what happened. So my friend asked me, he's like, where does your dad live again? And I was like, oh, he lives... Blah, blah. And he just tapped me on the shoulder and went like that. It's supposed to be a fucking interesting house. Be more interesting than John Grant. I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah. Absolutely done by this guy. And I sort of like... I don't know, he's right in a way. Like, I shouldn't have been just going on a random conversation.
But to be that kind of passive-aggressive about it and just
I just knew it as well.
He wanted to be annoyed about it, basically.
Yeah, he did. He really felt like he had an axe to grind with me.
People's thoughts on talking at gigs? Like, if it's a big room, maybe an enormous dome size, like, and you're at the back, I think it's totally legit. I mean, like, music should inspire sort of kind of just reactions and things that are going on. And it's not like just go, oh, let's go to this gig together.
I hate it.
I don't mind people having their own conversations. You do your own thing. That's your thing. But like when I'm with someone and they try and have a conversation with me, I'm like, shut up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so I like to go to gigs on my own just so I can just...
But what do you do in the middle when the bands aren't playing?
Oh, it's the best bit. People watch. Just look awkward.
A friend of mine, check
Instagram in the bugs. I don't know.
A friend of mine ruined a Radiohead gig at the Apollo in Manchester because he talked all the way through.
Was he talking to you?
No, he was just talking really loud behind me. We had to tell him 3 or 4 times. Sorry, Andy. I really, really...
Yeah, no, it's
I
fine.
Maybe
fine.
I've been burnt by that.
No, but I think it's the way he said it. Like, if he just said, can you... Sorry, I'm really sorry. Can you just be a bit quiet?
I feel like I'm a little bit fragile overall as well. And something like that will affect my entire night. Like, I'll think about it for a while afterwards. Like, was I wrong? Was I right? You know, and I'll just go over it and over it, and then, you know,
as long as you learn from
he was a fucking bellend.
Well, on that
note, Robin, what's yours? What have you been listening to this year? What's your highlight?
What have I been listening to? God, that's difficult because I've been listening to a lot of old shit. In fact, I was listening to...
When you said it, do you mean like classical music?
Yeah, but like, even older.
Shit. Yeah, I mean, like, you don't call classical music old shit.
Well, no, really old shit. Steve Reich put out a playlist of his favourite tunes, and it was a playlist of 20 pieces of music, but they're only actually like 6 different artists. So a few Radiohead tunes on there and Miles Davis, and then there was this guy called, I think it was Perrotin, who was like a 11th century choral writer, and I started listening to his stuff today, so that's really good.
You're such a
showing off. Honestly, I can't think of anything else new that I've been listening to.
Anyone else got any favourite things they'd like to shout out about?
Favourite
right
album of the year?
Because, I mean, we're always looking for ideas to steal here.
Yeah.
Anyone? Oh, Idols.
I said that on the way
here.
Well,
you see, that sort of brings in the topic of... So The Good, The Bad and The Queen have an album out tomorrow. It's Damon Albarn's supergroup, and it's the first album in 10 years, I think, that the band have done, the first one being about London life. And he says that this one has been inspired by the Brexit referendum and basically the general... I don't know if it's possible to say it's a celebration of Britishness, but basically the story of Britishness at this point. And I suppose it got me thinking about political songwriting because I'm determined to find something that we talk about that isn't chips and all the rivers of shit we played in front of. So does the idea of a Brexit album, does that excite anyone right now? Like, yeah, because right now it's sort of, when I heard about it, it kind of reminded me of when...
Street cleaners.
Yeah, okay, very good. I thought it was like massive, for some reason I thought massive Hoover.
Don't worry, the river of shit pretty much is just going to come straight through here now.
Yeah, come on. River of shit, freeway boys. Anyway, I mean, it kind of reminded me like...
Classic Dutch uncles, by the way, isn't it?
It kind of reminded me of when I bought the Fire and Fury book, the Donald Trump book, when it came out earlier this year. No, last year, wasn't it? Last year. And then I realised within five chapters that I was basically reading everything I've been watching on YouTube every morning, like Jon Stewart, well, not Jon Stewart, but Stephen Colbert and Seth Meyers and the general narrative. And you realise we're still right in the thick of this thing. And these things are always best observed when the dust has settled. But then, I don't know. Again, I'd rather, I don't know. I like the Wenger boys, so I'm just going
to
leave it at that.
We get from Brexit to the Wenger boys.
I don't know.
But is that like, you like the Wenger boys now, but you didn't like them 20 years ago?
Well,
like,
I mean, their production values will stand the test of time.
Well, there we go.
They definitely will.
From what I can gather from this Good, the Bad and the Queen thing, it's not about Brexit, is it? It's more about he just suddenly realised with the result of the referendum that nobody expected it, and it just meant that us as British people aren't having a conversation about how we feel about our identity and like who we think we are. And I think from what I can gather, it's more of a like, what does it mean to be British? And there's no succinct answer to that because we're from everywhere, you know.
Yeah, I think that's what we were reading about before as well. Because like the first Good, the Bad and the Queen album was about being in London,
yeah,
and that kind of state of mind, going back to, 2007, that album came out. And then this album is very much about being British now and what that means. Mm. And it's such a broad spectrum, like you say.
Would you say that any Metronomy songs or any other projects, have you ever been involved in any projects that have been politically quite attuned within the writing?
No. I know... No. I know that... Well, I don't know exactly, but I'm pretty sure Joe writes... He doesn't write about himself, or he doesn't write about experiences. He writes stories in his lyrics, and I quite like that. And I think that, for me personally, when I listen to music, I want to be taken on a lyrical journey as well. I want someone to tell me a story, like, you know, like the Divine Comedy or whatever, whom I quite like. He always tells me a story. It's quite... I don't know. But that's not to say that I don't like... political songs as well.
It's a good point about the Idols record. We were chatting on the way here, weren't we, Duncan? I don't think the Idols record... it's more of a commentary on society as it is at the moment without being too overtly political. And I think that's why it's really successful. I think that's why when I've listened to it, it's sort of like, yes, you know what I mean? I suppose going back to maybe... I don't know what bracket the Cortinas in, but really... encapsulating the mood of the time. And I think that's kind of maybe that's where the Good, the Bad and the Queen will be really successful in their record. Didn't we see a review, was it by John Robb on the way here, gave it 10 out of 10?
You know, yeah. It's about, yeah, he gives a lot of things 10 out of 10.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, but it's about the imagination of the time. And I think that's why the Idols record was so good for me this year. It was like, yeah. And I suppose when we did the podcast on the Mercury Prize, the ones that I leaned towards, sort of Nadine Shah, etc., was like, yes, that captures what I'm thinking now. So whether that is political or whether it's what, or whether, you know, it's commentary on what I'm thinking.
I always quite like albums with political content that have some sort of sarcastic, almost like vicious twist to them. Like Sleaford Mods, really. Like they're sort of, you know, poking a real dagger into the side of people about patriotism and about, you know, British institutions and saying like, really, is this what you value? Is this what you think makes you British? And I think that really sort of like sneery, like we're not all that sort of approach to political writing, especially in British. Yeah, English tapas sums it up beautifully. What would be involved with English tapas? What would be
genius, isn't it?
Like five chippy chips just lined up with some cocktail sticks.
25 quid.
A battered sausage.
Some tiny little Scotch eggs. Yeah. One of those like pineapple ham.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people would look at that and like, you know, real picture, look at that, it's like, it's brilliant. Absolutely.
It's got a
cornerstone of the,
of
the British culture. Fantastic.
All right, well, I think that wraps up the politics bit quite nicely. So let's leave it at that. Shall we finish on a low light? Should we do a low light?
Do you want to do a London low light? you like to say, coming to, because obviously first podcast in London and the podcast, we have low lights. What, should we start? Are you, Anna?
Oh, God.
London, we always, ask, we always ask our guests.
It could be a gig, it could be a meeting with a management record label, with DJ set. London lowlight, being a musician.
I mean, the story about your mum pulling up the sofa was pretty low, but can we go lower than that?
That was in Leeds, so that was in the north. Yeah. Can you come back to me? Can I think about it?
Of course, of course.
Can we start over there?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't worry, these boys got a list.
I mean, we talked about the river of shit before, didn't we?
But of course, we've come down all the way down to London and to do a podcast, and thank you ever so much for coming to see us, because I can imagine the only thing more surreal than being here is travelling 2 hours to come and do it, really. So, first of all, thank you ever so much. But the idea of, like, before, when we were kind of in the backstage area before, thinking, like, oh, is anyone going to show up and all this lot, and we were talking about the threatened thing and only two people showing up there, and it reminded me of a time when, you know how it goes these days, when you release an album, but shops want to have loads of free stuff that goes with it. So I remember HMV were going to release our... when our third album, Touch, came out, HMV wanted to have... Was it Cadenza?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
When our second album came out, HMV wanted to have like a free live CD to go with it. So we did a gig that HMV recorded. Luckily, they got all the song titles wrong. They got everything wrong. It was the last gig I ever did without earplugs because I couldn't hear anything and it was all out of tune. We heard the demos and went, we have to make this gig up. So what we did was, there was kind of a venue downstairs from our practice room. So when they sent us the masters for us to kind of mix, we were like, yeah, we'll send them back to you, right, don't worry. We recreated the gig downstairs to an empty room. And if that wasn't bad enough, because we had to try and make it as live as possible. So I think we did like two songs.
Well, we used some of the crowd noise from the original gig.
Well, yeah, we used some of the crowd noise. But then, to thicken that up a bit, we then had to record ourselves applauding in eight different parts of the room.
And I think at one point of this as well, it was like the seventh take on it, and it's really hidden under the layers. I think I shouted, "Fuck you, HMV." So if you really listen closely to that CD, which no one ever has, you'll hear that.
Yeah, so I guarantee you that CD will be somewhere on eBay for like a penny or something like that. If you ever want to hear that, like, that's a gig that Dungeon Calls completely faked.
What a gig. I played really
that's,
well.
That's more threatening than anything I've heard tonight. That's amazing.
Your move, Anna.
Yeah, beat that. You're in trouble, yeah.
Did I just say fuck you, HMV? Sorry.
Oh, dear. Yeah,
sure did.
Do they exist?
Sure did.
Does anyone buy records anymore?
I'm not sure. Sorry, Anna.
Well, it was...
I guess my London lowlight was... I was in a band called Lightspeed Champion in 2008, and I was living in Leeds at the time, and we were doing loads of gigs, and I was like, oh, I'm going to move to London. Why not? Fuck it. Found a flat in London, moved to London, and... The singer from Lightspeed, Dev Hines, he moved to New York and failed to just mention that he was doing that and that we were no longer a band.
This was before WhatsApp groups, wasn't it?
You're right, exactly. Yeah. I was like, oh, fucking hell. So I had to get a job, so I got... I ain't work shy.
Grafted.
Grammar grafter me. Got a job at the Science Museum. That was a lull. So I lived in Mile End and I had to get to South Ken every day. So I just sat on the district line for 50 minutes every fucking day. Just like, oh, it was horrible.
When's Dev coming back?
When's Dev coming back? No, and I didn't have any money. I was making like big vats. I was telling these guys a story earlier. Big vats of parsnip soup. I can't smell parsnip soup to this day because I had it for... lunch and dinner, pretty much.
Why was it parsnip soup in particular?
It was just seasonal, I guess. Maybe it was winter.
Yeah.
And it was just
got
cheap.
Out the back of the fields.
I try and get creative and maybe put some curry in there or something, you know, some curry powder.
Don't.
Yeah. No. Yeah, so that was
well,
a
yes. Yeah. That's appropriate. That's definitely appropriate. Yeah.
But I look back at it sort of reasonably fondly because when I first made contact with Joe from Metronomy and their management, our management. I was like having to take phone calls in the bogs of the Science Museum, you know. So I knew I was going to quit, and I was like, "Fuck you guys, I'm going to quit." Yes, that was turned into a highlight.
It was a very British way of sort of not being a band anymore. Someone just leaves.
You know, it's like no communication.
It's like, yeah. It's like at a party where, if, you know, if you're sharing a cab with a friend back, it's like, when did they go? Like, oh, they left hours ago.
Yeah.
You're on your own.
French exit.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, any other questions before we wrap up? Anyone want to say anything? Questions for anyone? It's fine if you don't. No? No.
Yeah, don't dangle it too long.
No,
okay. Well, we've got plenty of chips left there.
Our train is at 28 December. We have a little bit of time so we can come and chat to you all and say hi, etc. But yeah, so we'll wrap up now. Thank you to Rob. Thank you to Andy.
Cheers.
Thank you to Duncan. And I have a big round of applause for our special guest, Anna Pryor, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So
that's it. Thanks for getting to the end of the live podcast. We've just finished recording episode 13. I'll try and get that out soon. Please subscribe on your podcast provider. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Instagram. And thanks very much for listening.